Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your Yarn in Circle, the Murray Grapevine. It is National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Macquarie, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know it, BBM, Bama Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Indigenous Radio Service, and you can have your saber calls on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land where we broadcast from and to all our traditional owners across the deadly country of ours. Welcome back to National Talk Black. Have you say you mob, yarn up strong, ready for the yarns here on National Talk Black. All right, look, proudly to present my next guest who's come to join me, have a yarn. And look, she's the Lewegian Institute, named Leading Aboriginal Academic, Professor Royanne West. Proud to say, my cousin, beautiful, winner of the 2020 Lewegian Institute Colonial Award for Outstanding Research Leadership on the Line. My beautiful cousin, how are you? Good morning.
Good morning, another Murray from Macquarie.
And congratulations, my sister.
Thank you very much. Is this how I got to catch up with you?
I think so. That's right. Yeah, it's and it's not COVID-19. We're just so busy flat tack and living our life, my darling. Look, before we start, let the mob know, Roy, who your mob, where you from?
Yeah, so born and raised in Cloncurry, Trev. Born in the first 20 years between Cloncurry and Mount Isa.
Yes.
Fortunate enough to be born and raised Kalkadoon and have bloodline through my dad to the Jacunda people in southwest Queensland.
Beautiful, fantastic. And your beautiful father looking down at us, look strong in spirit, with us in spirit. And you got his gift of gab and his passion for your mob, but also with your beautiful mother, Aunty Karen, one love to her, in regard to work that she does in the space that you're working in as First Nation nurses. So let the mob know your story, my darling.
Yeah, so my success, Trev, like you, I attribute a lot of my success to many things, and that was being born and raised in Cloncurry and Mount Isa for my first 20 years. Mm. I'll be forever grateful for grandparents and parents making a deliberate and conscious decision to raise their children and grandchildren on our ancestral lands and to raise us with Aboriginal and everything that come with that.
Yes.
Like most of our mob that are working in this area, awards like this aren't just mine. They belong to my family and my community who keep us grounded, and that's really important for me.
And when you look at it, the passion for working in this industry with our mob, leading the way, and the hat that you wear, you're not doing it for any awards or recognition, but if it comes to the table, humble enough to accept it for our people, for our mob moving forward, yes?
Yes, absolutely. So as you know, Trev, Mum worked in Aboriginal health for nearly 40 years. She's only just recently retired and dedicated her life to improving the health of Aboriginal people, and still retired. She's still going down to the town camps and picking people up and bringing them up to the health service.
Yes.
But Mum knows that the job she does is critical. She knows that she's trusted and therefore has access to what Mum calls the real story, and this is something that she sees as a great responsibility and privilege and something that she's handed on to all of us.
So let's go back to high school days. Did you always have this passion to work in this field, following your mum's footsteps? Paint that picture, my sister.
I wish I could say that. It was probably after high school, but in high school I thought I was going to be a deadly basketballer. So like most Murray kids, we think we're going to be in either NBL or NRL.
Yeah.
But it was soon after that. So even though we'd watch Mum, I know I didn't appreciate the work that she had done until, much later in my life. And my very first job was as an Aboriginal health worker at the Yindjalinji Health Service there in Mount Isa, where Mum was my boss.
Boss at home, boss at work.
Yes.
Clean that room up. You didn't take the lady's pulse. That's right. Shut up. So you started working there, and that's where it all started. Did your passion then grow? Did you think, look, I need to get serious with this? My heart's in the right place. I was meant to be here. Tell us about that, Dale.
Probably one of the most significant milestones, Trev, was when we all started our nursing at Mount Isa. A nursing program was brought to Mount Isa. We had never, ever had any intentions of going to university. As kids from Mount Isa, it wasn't an option that was ever presented to us as a possibility when we were at high school.
Yep.
And Mum told us to do our nursing degrees. I had three pickaninnies by that stage.
Yeah.
The twins were 4 months and Key was 4 years old. But I was also in a unhealthy relationship, and the nursing degree really was my lifeline out and transformed my life and the life of Leona and Laurie. And that's one of the reasons why we're so committed, is to see what the possibilities that a university level education can bring. It's transformative.
Yes. Now, you mentioned Leone and also Laurie Boy, your siblings, who are nurses as well. And then you've got beautiful big sister Priscilla, who's in the communication industry, yes?
Yes, absolutely. And all work is, so my whole family works in Aboriginal health except for Priscilla.
Yep.
She's the black sheep, we call her.
Second that.
Them 20s now, one's enrolled in nursing and one's enrolled in midwifery, and they both work at Gidgee. And at one point, Mum was at Gidgee, Leona was at Gidgee, and the twins were at Gidgee.
Shut up. West Affair.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's another generation coming along behind us. And I want to acknowledge Anna Junie Barton, who was the first Aboriginal nurse who graduated from the Mount Isa.
Big shout out, Auntie Jenny. Yes, beautiful.
Yeah, big shout out, Auntie Jenny.
Fantastic.
And then it just went on from there, Trev, because I never thought I'd ever do a university degree. We always thought uni was for white fellas, for smart fellas, and for rich fellas. And we worked out the system. And from there, I went on to do a master's and a PhD. And but as a mature age student, and it's made a phenomenal difference to the doors that have opened up for me, for our people through me.
Thank you. Beautiful. So we go a mile, we see a mile, so to speak. So you went to get to your nursing degree, and then you moved on from there. Here you are, professor, and now picking up the award there with the Luigia Institute, Kralana Award. So look, outstanding research and leadership and the work that you're doing there. So look, it was just meant to be, my sister.
Yeah, yeah. I feel very privileged, Trev, and I believe I'd be somehow diminished to choose a life lesser than what Gran and Mum held out was possible. So I've also learnt to use my mind. My biggest sacrifice is sometimes being away from family and a long way from Cloncurry and Mount Isa.
Yep.
But certainly the things that I've been able to achieve to have a much greater impact than on a small community, to have it at a national level, which is where the changes really do need to be happening.
Well, when you look at the so-called affirmation they've run with for years, close the gap. Well, we're talking about the health situation. Our people are still behind the eight ball, and this gap still is widened, and it needs to be closed. And the work that you're doing, well, it gives a good platform for young brothers and sisters to step up to the plate and to work and walk in this industry, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what all my work is around, Trevor, is actually addressing institutional racism through education and training. And the number one priority there is increasing the number of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people we have in all of the health professions across the country.
And as I always said, nothing beats black on black. When you've got our mob working with our mob, especially in the health department, you know, doors can close, gaps can close, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have to think that, Trev, so to think anything else would just be sad. So I truly believe that we're in a different era, especially on the back of the Black Lives Matter movement. We really have to capitalise on the waves that that's causing.
Exactly.
And capitalise that in Australia and on the work that we're doing at the system level and at the individual level.
All right, too deadly, my sister. So regarding the award, how was this brought to you? Did you receive a text or a smoke signal? How did this come about, and what was your thought when it all happened, my sister?
I got a phone call from Luigia, and look, I have to tell the truth, I didn't know what Kralana actually was.
Well, I know it broke my jaw trying to pronounce it, but anyway, yeah.
I was excited, but then I hopped online, Trevor, and had a look, Covey, and it's all around ethics and morals, and that's really the foundation of the way that we think and make decisions.
Exactly.
And having you know, a very Western education, I already think quite critically, but to be in 6 days of intensive training where you really do interrogate what's the ethics and morals that drives your decision-making.
Yep.
I laughed when I looked at the description of the training because it says 2,000 years of knowledge, and I went, we got 60,000 years of knowledge.
There you go, that's right. So, like, you don't need the white piece of paper to class that you're a professor. We are professors from 60,000 years ago.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's what our fighters, Trev, when we're committed to increasing our mob in the health professions, it's how do we get our Aboriginal knowledges recognised?
Mm.
And that includes our Aboriginal ethics and our morals as well. So I know I'll learn a lot through this training, but I have no doubt they'll learn a lot from me, and me being very clear about Aboriginal ethics and morals and Aboriginal knowledge comes from being born and raised on country and having family that keeps you grounded.
Mm.
You know, when I go back to Mount Isa, I'm not professor or doctor or any of my titles. I'm just Cindy Frogwell 20.
Mm-hmm. You know? 20, Sister Roy Ann. That's right, exactly, you know. It's all low mob tuck shop money out there, you know. Oh,
yes.
Beautiful.
They always keep you grounded, and that's exactly what you need when you get into these positions and you get into these systems, because they can eat you up, and before you know, you become a part of them. And that's the good thing about this training, is really consolidating your ethics and morals. Your critical thinking will ensure that you won't waver to some of the influences within your systems that you work.
Exactly. And when you look at opportunities like this, you get the letters after your name, so to speak, your professor. To me, that's just a platform to then speak from the heart and for our people and get the message across, you know, and it gives you an opportunity to educate the people of the world where we're at, what we need to be doing, and we've got the answers to our problems, yes?
Yeah, absolutely, Trev. Never about the initials, never about the qualifications or all the perks that come with it, but they make people listen. So once you've got the same education, you start to mitigate the power dynamic that exists between blackfellas and whitefellas in systems and in leadership.
Yep.
So they listen much more. And certainly when I want to watch Mum as a health worker for that many times and always being answerable to a non-Indigenous nurse who didn't value what she bought.
Exactly.
That was heartbreaking for us, and Mum didn't want us to be in that position, which is the reason she encouraged us to do our nursing, and now most of us are bosses.
Yes, exactly. I've always said, my darling, success breeds success, and you are now opening up the eyes and hearts and spirits of young brothers and sisters to step up to the plate and be the best that they can be.
Yeah, beautiful, Trev. Love to Auntie Dawes.
Yes, exactly. Love Dani Dorsch, yeah. My beautiful, your beautiful mother's sister, my father's sisters. Look, love you dearly. Congratulations. We'll be in touch. And yeah, we're due for lunch. Your shout, sissy.
I got graham chips now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. We'll book it up. Roy, thank you very much, darling. All the best to you and your beautiful family. Congratulations. Look, leading the way in this industry. You are a success for your mob, for your family. And look, hats off to you, my darling.
Lovely. Thanks, Trev. Love you. Bye-bye.
Love you. Take care. Bye-bye. Beautiful Professor Roy-Ann West, beautiful cousin, just received the 2020 Lewitcher Institute Kralania Award for Outstanding Research Leadership. Professor West is a Foundation Professor of First Peoples Health and Foundation Director of the First Peoples Health Unit at Griffith University. And after beginning her pioneering work in Aboriginal health research and health workforce reform 25 years ago as an Aboriginal health worker at an Aboriginal community controlled health service. And look, raised in Mount Isa Cloncurry and Kalkadoon on her grandmother's ancestral lands in northwest Queensland, with connections to the Jadigu peoples in southwest Queensland. Her work builds on family legacy that includes four generation Aboriginal nurses and long line of healers. So big shout out to her beautiful mother, my auntie Karen, who's now retired as a nurse, and congratulations to her beautiful sister Leona, who's a nurse as well, and her brother Roy, Laurie West, he's a nurse. And And, of course, big sister, cousin Priscilla, who's in the communication industry. Big shout-out, family. This is your daily program. Add to the conversation, 1-800-422-416. Yarn with Baldy and Trevor, Tim, Trendy, Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation, thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Give me a call. Let's have a yarn, 1-800-422-416.
Sing about life, sing about possibilities. You know you may be right, you and me will both be free. Talk about life, is anybody listening to the cry of one child?
Yeah, that's Sing About Life. Titters here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have you say your mob, 1-800-422-416. Call the number, yarn with the Baldy one here, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station in Cairns, BBM, Bumber Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Right, we're going to catch up a yarn now with Indigenous filmmaker Caden Pearson and talk about Wahoo Divine Hope, which premieres on NITV Monday, 27 July, and talk about that daily short film and catch the Divine Hope of Aboriginal Easter tradition on the line. Caden, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Well, Nad, brother, thank you for coming along. First of all, let the mob know who your mob were you from.
My mob are Bakar Moku and from Hope Vale in far north Queensland, and Gugulalanji through my grandmother's side.
Beautiful. Big shout out to the mob up that way, and look, Deadly Footprint. And look, Indigenous filmmaker you are. Tell us about the premiere of Wawu Divine Hope, please, brother.
Yeah, so Wawu Divine Hope is, Wawu is a Gugu Yimitir word for your inner soul or your spirit. And so Wawu Divine Hope is a film about an Easter tradition that we have in Hope Vale, where every year the community comes together and cleans up the graves at the cemetery. And
lovely.
Brings fresh flowers and fresh paint, and everybody gets together helping each other out, and the place is done up and refreshed and brightened, and then on the Easter Sunday we have a dawn service at the cemetery, which is really, it's been described by some of the people that it just helps them feel closer to their loved ones, and
yes,
it's a way to pay respect to the pioneers.
It is.
Help just sort of set up the community after everyone was displaced during the war.
Fantastic. So, Caden, the mob coming together at the cemetery on Saturday morning, is that all hands on deck, open to everybody in the community?
So it's on the Easter Sunday at 6 a.m.
Easter Sunday, okay.
And everyone from the community is welcome. It's a kind of a small service. People sing hymns. A lot of the hymns were translated into language, and so and these are sort of beloved hymns in the community, and then they have a bit of a sermon, and often if there's been a recent passing, there might be the unveiling of a new tombstone.
Yes.
And then people kind of make their way down to the church for the usual 9 a.m. Easter Sunday service, and the big event really, I mean, as much as the dawn service is the culmination of the week, the big event where everyone is coming together is on the Saturday, and people are there kind of all day long. People are making cups of tea. It's a time for the community to be together, and you see all these sort of lovely acts of kindness where people are helping each other out, lending hoes and wheelbarrows and rakes and chipping in, and you might turn up and find that someone's already weeded and painted your grandmother's grave.
Lovely.
Because they have a connection to her as well.
Yes.
And I really wanted to capture that in the film because, one of the things that I set out to do was I wanted my people in Hope Vale to see themselves on screen and be inspired by themselves.
Yes.
And, every time you place a flower or you pull a weed, it's an expression of your love for that person. Mm. And it was really important for me to show that and just to show...
My brother, so deep, so deep.
Yeah, I think we there's a lot of stories that sort of go into the traumas of our history, and I think that leaves a psychological impact on us when we watch that. And I wanted anyone who watched my film to come away with a positive impression, that to see hope in ourselves, that, you know, to see that love expressed for each other and that caring and that sense of community.
Mm. My brother, I'm picking up your prime example of our mob who grow up in our community with our mob, and as we become mature and look at our pathway into life, and then using that vehicle by painting that picture or telling the story about our mob, our life growing up, and then our community. And that's exactly what you've done. Hats off to you, my brother.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, look, it's a very unique thing. It's something about our part of the world in you know, Southeast Cape York Peninsula, but it's universal. Everyone can relate to wanting to make sense of your history, to get together with your community and be together and enjoy each other's company and also pay respects to your loved ones. So it's a universal story that anyone around the world can enjoy, but it's very local because it shows who we are and how we express ourselves through our culture as well as our faith and our history and experiences.
Caden, can you tell us about the thought process and how you went about it in regarding talking to elders with this concept, this idea, going through the right channels of respect to elders? Tell us about how it all came to fruition, so to speak.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is a tradition I grew up with. It's just something we always did. And it's always just been something nice and humble and sort of enjoyable. Mm. But one day I was driving past in the evening a few years ago, and I saw sparkling lights coming out of the cemetery, and I thought, oh my God, we've brought technology into this now. And I thought it was amazing. Whoever's creativity thought to put sparkling lights on their loved one's grave, I thought that's great.
Yes.
So I knew that's when I wanted to tell a story about it. And so last year I reached out to Dora Gibson, who was traditional owner, Dubiwata, and I told her I wanted to make this film, what do you think? And she was really supportive.
Good.
She spoke to the local church elders and to the rest of the traditional owners for Hopewell, as well as other people in the community. Everyone was behind it and was very enthusiastic about it.
Because you went through the right channels and respect to the elders and talked to the elders in the community about your concept and idea, you know, so you weren't selfish about it, you did it the right way. If they would have said no, Caden, this wouldn't have happened, of course, with respect.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the owners of the story are the people who own that intellectual property.
True.
And that's the Indigenous people. And so when I turned up just before Easter last year, they invited me to come to the Palm Sunday church service to meet some of the people who I might want to be have involved in the film. Mm. And when I got there, everyone had already organized my interview schedule for me. They said,
they were the directors.
On Tuesday, this one Wednesday, this one the afternoon, this one in the morning. So it showed me how much they supported the film and how excited they were about it. Because, I mean, you go to Hopewell at Easter and you will see how much people value and treasure this tradition.
Yes.
And so they want to share that, you know, and Hopewell is that place where people want to share their culture and their spirit and what makes Hopewell, Hopewell.
So to all visitors around the globe, if you come to Hopewell on Easter Monday, you'll see a beautiful cemetery.
Well, let me tell you, actually, there's a very interesting story. There was a man who... I mean, it's kind of funny, too. Mm. There was a man who happened to visit Hopewell at Easter, and he saw the cemetery looking beautiful, and he thought that's what it looked like all year long. And so when he died, he had his body sent to be buried at Hopewell from Europe.
No.
And his family came, and unfortunately, he wasn't buried at Easter, so the graveyard looked quite ordinary. And I think perhaps his family, people laugh about when they recall the story, but perhaps his family didn't understand why he wanted to be buried in this place. But
Easter Sunday, he'd be smiling down, looking at his beautiful grave.
Yeah.
It is funny. That's beautiful. But that's the magic of a concept, of an idea, and it coming to fruition. But like I said, it belongs to the community, it belongs to the elders, and we are loving and respecting our beautiful loved ones who are with us in spirit, brother.
Yeah, for sure.
Beautiful story.
That's the whole thing it's about. And then, you know, people have told me they get different things out of it. Some people, it's therapeutic. For others, it is about that paying respect to the pioneers and the elders. But for others, it's about hope that one day they will, you know, reunite with their soulmate or with their loved one on the other side.
So, Wawu Divine Hope, the premieres on NITV, Monday, July 27, 8:30 p.m. Of course, the Mob and Hope, I'll be watching it closely. And exciting times, my friend.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I look forward to it, being able to share it with the rest of
You're too delicate, and all the best to you, my brother. Keep doing what you're doing. Big shout-out to your mob there, and we'll talk soon, my friend.
All right. Thanks so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for having me.
Too Deadly. That's Caden Pearson. Caden Pearson, his name is. He's the Indigenous filmmaker. And look, coming from Hopevale, and a short film captures divine hope of an Aboriginal Easter tradition. So fantastic. And so if you're looking to visit Hopevale Cemetery, do it on Easter Sunday, Easter Monday, and you'll see the beauty as it is. And the spirits are alive. Fantastic. Have your say, you mob. Yarn up strong. Add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. The time here in Cairns is 11:31. So 29 minutes ago. Have you saying Yarn Up Strong, National Talk Black, a voice for our people. Do utilise it. That deadly number, 1-800-422-416. If you are on the shy side, you can text the brother, 045-714-0550. And our Facebook page as well, BBM987FM. To Deadly, one over Yarn. Yarn with the bully one, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black.
Yeah! Mob, this is Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1800 422 416.
back at you, that saltwater ban here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have you say your mob, 1-800-422-416. We've got someone online. Someone, very good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, brother. And a big thank you to you, brother.
Thank you
for having this show. Unwittingly, you're providing a service. You know, they say, are you okay? And we can come on there. And
yes. Thank you. Thank you, my brother. Thank you.
No, but listen, brother, that's good. I love it, brother.
Fantastic.
My call about farmers, fire stick farming yesterday, and that sort of made me angry is the way the government, the narrative the government uses, like they use it in a way, like they're doing us a good turn. Whoopee! You know what I had to call yesterday? We're able to do fire stick farming because of native title. And for six, I add both, you say, 60,000 or whatever it was. Years you've been doing it with land, but we're on the land, brother.
Exactly. Exactly.
I said that Peter Beattie when he said, I'm going to do a part of reconciliation. Let's just have your stolen wage or something like that, and land rights. They're not giving it. They're retaining all those things, and that's the narrative I didn't like. I think I was angry about.
Sure,
brother, thank you for those four guests you had so far. Okay, caller about the grave.
Yeah,
Don Sideway, Professor West.
Yes,
and Daryl Mega, brother. I enjoyed those calls, brother.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and got a call this morning. I go back to what Bernice was saying, and the immigrants, the people of colour that come here, and they become Australian. They take on the Australian values, like the racist values, and they maintain the status quo. They keep us in our place, you know, and let us know where we are too.
Exactly.
But they're going in there, those four that are just smitten, going into that area, and they're able to rock the boat, brother. They're able to
true.
From inside, brother.
True.
And I love that, brother. Brother, I want to talk about to all those people that the true believers of belief. Well, just recently, like the single parent got a payout, family captain. I got $2,000, brother. But let the true believers, the racist, know where my money went. Laptop for my three at high school, it cost $500 a week. No, I'm sorry, I lied. $499 a week. So money went to the, and $430 went into a second-hand washing machine. And I'm not angry at the racist, brother. I'm angry at myself. I couldn't even afford myself a bloody rum steak, brother. No, I wanted to buy a rum steak, but I got a $7 shirt and then $5 shorts up at Woolies. So for those people that run us down as dads, you know, like deadbeat fathers, That's where my money went. But on the John from Sideway, brother, I think there has to be one rule in a taxi. No booking up. Let's put a pack on there. No booking up. And brother, with John too, I have to say that my favorite, Derivative Test from TI, comedian, is Afri. I forgot her name. But she's my favorite from the straight. She's my favorite. Comedian, but as listening or family listening, I got to give it to Amy Gingo. It's the only time she like to be, you want to be a white while it's 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when he's catching a cab. But as far as racism and taxi, brother, it's improved a little bit because human rights, when Jim Brooks was in charge of human rights down in Apple Street, I went to when Ernie O'Neill got compensated for the racial discrimination, that they locked him back from his job because he was Aboriginal. At the same time that happened, when I use the taxi, but the difference now, the taxi, like before it used to be he say, I say, or you say, but now they got the recording, and that's the benefit now. Taxi drivers are that way, brother. That's my beef was about that, about the US and how much they're in control. When I hitchhiked from Darwin in 1976 from Darwin to Mount Isa, the one ride we got there was a left hand drive, convertible, a Cadillac convertible. And I believe that fella was Charlie Anderson. He was the husband of the Sir Anderson that wrote that book. And that Sir Anderson done the circuit, the TV circuit, Ray Martin and all that. Struggled, and there was only 15 black fellows on Bull River Station. And knew one of them black fellows was the operator. But to show you, all the places you're going to get a ride in American, the left-hand drive would be the charity. And us talking about like the spy base, the US spy base strategic mission, a good place for the US. And in the 80s, in the 80s, I'm the only black girl. I went out to the airport otherwise for it because, like I often say, I don't let my affinity limit my humanity. Because my humanity, that was the only place where the B-52 were able to refuel. They have to be in the air all the time to make a UPS flight. And I went out there because of that. What's going on? They look over here on the left hand, you see what the right hand is. They emphasize too much in the black line. And that rail link, when Paul Everingham was the chief minister, it only went far as from Alice Springs to Larimar, and it's cut off. From Alice Springs, Adelaide to Alice Springs, it's cut off. Then the road train took to Larimar, from Larimar to Darwin. And at the time, there was talk about getting a rail link extended, but the fallout that was beyond all that contract for that, none other than Ronald Rumsfeld, brother, he's highly Vietnam, and subsidiary of the company that built that railway, and they rail uranium rods from Boxby, where we are. People want, you know, the fight where they landed from down there. They rail up to Darwin, a lot of Marines up there, but there's a lot of emphasis on black fellows, but not too much on Americans, and how much, you know, like our sovereignty is taken away by the American. And that's why I feel that with them, I reckon the Americans had a lot to do with sucking me, brother.
Sure.
Thank you very much. Are you okay now?
You're okay now. Thank you, my brother. All the best to you. That's someone there, regular caller here on your daily program, National Talk Black. You're Mob Murray, going to sign off here. Thank you very much for your company. Back in the hot seat here tomorrow with that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service, and we're housed at the First Nation Radio Station in Cairns, BBM, Bumber Brit Media, 90.7 FM. A voice for people said, yeah, do utilise your mob 24-7. You can text us 045-714-0550 and our Facebook page as well. And that's 24-7 as well, BBM, 987 FM. Other look, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong, and look, take care. We are still in the pandemic, and the coronavirus is still upon us, and we only got the vaccine of keeping our hands clean, constantly washing our hands, keeping away from each other, 1.5 metres, and do what we need to do. Queensland, thumbs up, doing a great job. Thoughts are going out to New South Wales and Victoria and what's happening down there, but we are in the pandemic, so take care, you mob. Too deadly.